Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Scottish Rugby Podcast, brought to you by the Scottish Rugby Blog. We're live now on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, and Twitter, which is Periscope, but I think it ends up on Twitter somehow. We are joined this evening, and we've got some rugby to talk, international rugby to talk about, no less. I'm joined this evening by Rory Baldwin.
Hello.
Back in from the cold, Rory.
Yeah.
Or band practice.
Band practice, yeah.
Yeah. And John Anderson.
Evening, folks.
We've got a lot to get through this evening, but we should tell you how to get in touch with us. You can get in touch with us by visiting the blog, scottishrugbyblog.co.uk, where we're going to have lots of coverage of the upcoming international matches and more besides. You can find us on Twitter at ScottRugbyBlog, and I'm at Cammy Black. We are also, we've got our Patreon page, our lovely Patreon page, where you can get additional content. You get ad-free episodes. You now get edited versions of the podcast as well, where I cut this bit out, where I tell you how to get in contact with us and how to sign up to be a Patreon. But for £3 a month, you get extra episodes. You get ad-free content. So that's worth. So if you go to patreon.com/ScottishRugbyPodcast, you can sign up there. For £5 a month, though, not only do you get access to all that, but we will read your name out on the podcast as a special thank you. So very special thank you to George Pilley, who actually signed up 2 weeks ago, but I forgot to read his name out. We've got Neil Barraskill, Jamie Settle, and also Alistair McFadden. A big thank you to Alistair, who has gone above the £5. Now, the £5 is the kind of minimum top band. You can go higher if you want to. Don't go too crazy, because we don't want to start getting in trouble with the tax man. If I have to start doing more admin, then that's going to take the fun out of it.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a gulf between everyone being able to do rugby blogging and podcasting full time, and you guys being really generous, and in that gulf is the tax man.
Yeah. So please be generous, but not too generous, otherwise we'll have to do paperwork.
Or be or be really, really, really generous in really large numbers.
Yeah, so the admin feels worthwhile. Yeah.
If you pay us enough that we can afford an accountant, we're fine with it.
Yeah.
If you're an accountant, I don't know if that would work if an accountant paid us and then we'd pay. I don't think that works quite. There's a little bit of news tonight before we get into the Scotland Georgia match announced today. We have found out that, I mean, it's kind of been the worst kept secret in rugby, but Murrayfield is going to host a test match between the British and Irish Lions and Japan before the tour on Saturday, the 26th of June. It's going to be the Vodafone Lions 1888 Cup. The Lions are saying this is the first ever home game, or the first home games, or the first one for a while, I think. I'm sure they played.
They played in Cardiff.
Yeah, they did. I thought they played it in
2005.
Yeah, did they not play against the rest of the world at some point as well? Was there not a fixture?
I think there was one in the 80s or the 90s they did, but yeah. They played in Cardiff, which ended Chris Cusiter's tour pretty much before it started, because he didn't play well and then never got picked for the rest of it.
Yeah, so this is being billed as a home match, which, depending on how squad selections go, it could be a home match. I mean, you know, if from a PR angle, even if Warren Gatlin was to only select Scottish players for the dirt trackers, if he was just to play the dirt trackers against Japan, and that's also going to be the day of the English Premiership final.
Yeah.
Although nobody from Exeter gets picked for England anyway, so that's not going to affect that many English players.
They might pick them all for the Lions, do that thing where they have one guy who's not had a cap. He could just pick a whole bunch of extra players.
Well, that's what they did in 97, isn't it? Wouldn't everybody, was it Northampton Gregor Townsend was playing for in 97? Yeah. And they were in like Division 3. Because professionalism had just turned up, and it was like Matt Dawson and Gregor Townsend and all these really good players playing in Division 3 but still getting caught international call-ups.
How raging would you be if you were in Division 3 and that team turned up against you? You would be livid. Like, you're just planning to go down for a social, and you turn up and there's Dawson and Townsend lining up 9 and 10 against you. You'd be absolutely beeling.
It's the amateur days, so I don't think the golf was as big.
If there's any more dirt on Saris, you never know, it could happen now.
That's true. I know, I loved people saying about the Premiership final, and they're like, oh, well, what about all the Saris players that will miss out? It's like, they're not going to make the Premiership final next year. They're not going to be in the Premiership next year.
Yeah. So that's going to be interesting. I mean, there's Graham Love has already posted a picture of himself in his Japan top that he made out of a red T-shirt and some white sticky tape.
Yeah, but you can't buy that on his shop.
No, I'm thinking of starting a business in tartan kimonos just to try and cash in.
Or yeah, those kind of kamikaze headband things with a splash of tartan or something.
I think you can get now that part of the, we didn't know this at the time, but part of the benefit of being an Everest member with the SRU is that if you sign up for the Everest membership, which is £34, I think it's a £34 one-off payment, isn't it? It's not like £34 a month. It's like a Patreon thing.
Is this the Nevis membership, not Everest?
That's at Nevis. I'm getting ahead of myself.
Or was this the, what did we dub that before? Was that the Johnny Gray or the Richie Gray?
Who's taller?
Richie.
It's the Richie Gray, banding. So it's the top banding. If you pay £34 before the 1st of November, you get entered it. You can apply for tickets early, assuming that by June, you know, we're back in stadiums and stuff. To be fair, I don't think the SRU are making a big enough play of that and trying to encourage people from England to sign up to the Nevis package.
Yeah, good point, actually. Yeah. It's a good selling point.
That would be a lovely, I think it would be kind of poetic justice if kind of Scotland survived because of all the financial contributions through the Nevis package and the RFU went under.
Well, I mean, plenty of English fans have their seasons pass for Murrayfield just for the England game anyway. So,
well, that's true. I mean, that's why that I think Bruce Aitchison says the only reason that Berwick are members of the RFU and the SRU is so that we can get tickets to Twickenham and Murrayfield.
Tickets for both seasons. Smart. Yeah. Yep, there you go.
Yeah, so it's a sort of thank you to Scotland for sending the Old Firm fans down there to watch the football.
It's Blackpool. Yeah.
Why Blackpool? I just don't understand it.
Why not, John?
Well, yeah.
You get a right.
Blackpool.
Yeah, the show. What's it called? Blackpool Pleasure Beach. Maybe that's open. Get yourself on the two penny slots after the game.
Although,
what's not to like?
Although with inflation after Brexit is now the £2 coin. So
the £2 coin shove.
Hi.
I've got a wee. Anyway, I've got a wee thing because obviously we'll all be sporting Japan. I thought I'd do a quick wee quiz for you. So I've translated some famous Scottish sayings that you might hear in Murrayfield on match day, and I want you to tell me what they mean. So the first one is "Anata wa anata no o shiri ni anata no kuso shensa o tsukurasu koto ga dekimasu." So what do you think that means?
Should we make him say it again, John?
didn't quite catch that.
Well, is it something where the word appears three times?
Well, that's good detective work.
Might it be something to do with chariots?
Well done, John. And well done for not swearing.
Yeah, might it involve a placing of a chariot somewhere?
It is the famous chant of where you may place your chariot. That is correct. The next one is anata ni soro tad ashiku shi nasai. I'll read that one back again. So anata ni sor o tadashiku shi nasai.
Well, anata was in the last one, so it's either o or you, maybe. You.
That's a tough one. That's a very tough one. I mean, they're all tough because, you know,
I don't speak Japanese.
Speaking Japanese to us.
It'd be a pretty pointless endeavour this if you did, though, to be fair.
Well, yeah, no, yeah.
It'd just be you commenting on my pronunciation.
So, it's a good job I've not been doing Japanese Duolingo on lockdown.
Genevieve has been, actually, so I should probably give her a shout. But is this something to do potentially with, I'm going to speculate, this is something to do with overpriced pints. So, that, you know, ordering overpriced pints.
No, it's get it right up you.
I was going much more highbrow.
And the last one is Dari ni Taishite. and that is Japanese. I'm not swearing. Dari ni taishite.
Cats
in a rave. I'll give you a clue. It appears in the national anthem.
Send them homewards.
No, what are your guess, John?
I just from the riskiness of what you've done so far, I'm afraid it might be additional lyrics to the national anthem.
It is additional lyrics, but not the ones you're thinking of, John. Which I like the fact you went straight to those ones. It's actually the other ones. It's against who?
Ah, see, yes.
I don't think it quite scans. Proud Ed, what is it? How would it go? As dude against him, Dari ni taishite.
I really hope Japanese people decide to just embrace it and go with that. That
I don't see. Well, why not?
Greek should be teaching them.
I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure once Mr. Greek sees this, he'll get a retweet on the go for his fans to have a look and mock us friendly.
The big game though that we're talking about is Friday night. 7:30 kickoff on ITV4, home of Murder, She Wrote, and now home of international rugby. We've got Scotland versus Georgia. I really hope they stick Hot Fuzz on afterwards as well, because a night that'll be.
Point of order, I did say that Colombo is mostly on 5-star or something, but they do occasionally have Colombo episodes on ITV4 as well, so... You were correct in your original.
They do. They have the better Columbo episodes because 5-star have got the rights to the later episodes, which are rubbish.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've watched just about all of them at this point, and every Sunday you check through 4 back-to-back Columbo episodes on 5-star to see if it's one we haven't seen, and we've seen them all now that 5-star have to offer. But occasionally ITV come up with a good one.
You 5-star is generally like the ones where the guest stars Billy Connolly.
Yeah, they do have a lot. I mean, they've got all the early ones, or a lot of the early ones too, but yeah, the kind of later ones.
Billy Connolly play a tennis professional?
No, he was a movie composer.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Anyway, we digress slightly. So yes, Scotland, Georgia, first bit of international rugby we've had for a while, and the team was announced today, so that's kind of why we delayed the podcast for a day, because we thought it was worthwhile. So... Scotland, you've got from back to front, as it appears on the blog, we've got Blair Ginghorn, Darcy Graham, Chris Harris, James Lang, Doohan Van Der Merwe, Adam Hastings, Ali Price, Rory Sutherland, Fraser Brown, who's captain, Xander Ferguson, Ben Toulis, Scott Cummings, Jamie Ritchie, Hamish Watson and Matt Ferguson, and then the replacements, as Scotland call them rather than finishers, we've got Stuart McInally, Ollie Kebble, Simon Bergen, Rob Harley, Nick Haining, Cornell Dupree, George Horn and Finn Russell. John, any surprises for you in that?
A couple of names kind of jumped out. Obviously, there's been lots of chat about James Lang, and it's interesting to see him straight in there. Other than that, I mean, you fully expected Doohan and Ollie Kebble to get capped as soon as possible. Other than that, probably not. I mean, for a first hit out, it's probably as close to a team as you would see, whilst maybe the only surprise is there's quite a lot of Edinburgh players in there, and I thought there might be more of an emphasis on the exile players, just to give, because obviously Glasgow and Edinburgh have got a fixture this weekend as well, and you know, any opportunity to give them stronger teams for those fixtures, I think, should have been taken. And I think Edinburgh have been more impacted than Glasgow this time round.
Have Glasgow announced their team for Saturday yet?
No.
Because I mean, we were speculating the other week, weren't we, how they're going to manage this from a bubble point of view? Because I don't know whether or not there is an option to release back from, because it's a small squad. Yeah. I don't know whether or not there is now an option for players to go back and play for Glasgow and Edinburgh if they're within the international bubble.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that might, perhaps that is the kind of logic behind it, and they've obviously thought, well, you're international rugby players now, so you have to stay here for a while, and we'll have to get the 14-year-olds from the academy up and running, playing senior rugby. Like the good old days when you get called up to play when you were far too young to be playing against adults. I think that's what's going to happen.
It is an interesting thing, Rui, because I mean, I think Gav Harper was reporting that Tom Gordon's been training with a squad and Jaco van der Voort's been seen hanging about as well. So there are other guys around the squad, but you know, Sean Maitland has been released to the Barbarians.
Yeah,
so it is all a bit. It's a bit strange, isn't it? A bit at the minute, kind of like.
Yeah, I mean, there were pictures on Twitter earlier of the Scotland women training, and a lot of them seem to be wearing masks in the photos that I saw. I think, unless my eyes deceive me or my memory. So I mean, I don't know whether they say, well, if you do a couple of training sessions with a mask, then you're okay to go back, you know, because Tooney's obviously going to have a rough idea of what his team's going to be. He's going to know which guys he's probably definitely not going to pick unless there's an injury. I mean, yeah, obviously Grant Gilchrist and Damien Hoyland, they've been released back to Edinburgh, but they're injured now, so Edinburgh can't play them either, which is probably not great news for Edinburgh.
No, I mean, any surprises for you within that, Rory? I mean, I suppose it was the Hastings Russell thing, but I guess Hastings the kind of incumbent, so
yeah, I mean,
how many times would we go with that?
Yeah, I mean the like John said, the midfield, Harrison and Lang, you know, that's probably nobody's idea of a good time, but that probably means they'll be amazing, you know. They'll come out and silence us all with pace and verve. Yeah, I mean, it's not the front row looks like Scotland's first choice front row. They obviously don't want to give the Georgians too much of a set piece kind of platform in the scrum. So it's almost like they've had no choice but to put the top props out to just kind of preserve their game plan. But yeah, I don't think you could say that there's much in the way of first picks that we'll see. It's good to see Darcy Graham getting a run. Blair Kinghorn's not long back from injury, though. That's a wee bit of a concern. There were a few guys on the website who were sort of suggesting Hugh Jones, given his recent adventures at fullback, might have been an option in there.
I suppose, though, I mean, and this seemed to be the big thing on Twitter today, that people were saying it's you've only got two backs on the bench. Mm-hmm. I mean, but it's George Horn and Finn Russell. You know, that's
enough to change the game right there.
Yeah, but I suppose you within the starting backs and within and on the bench, you've got versatility. I mean, again, you know, Gav Harper was pointing out on that George Horn ended up, I think, on the wing against Russia. We know Finn Russell has played 12 outside of Adam Hastings, you know, in that last 20 minutes, that glorious last 20 minutes that we had of, you know, it against Fiji. Then there's... Hastings has played fullback, yeah, against
Harris has played wing.
It's almost a guess as what the final back line will be once, you know, if there's something odd happens or if Russell comes off.
It's interesting, isn't it, that probably, I mean, probably Ali Price and Doohan are the only ones that really have probably like a single position, and you wouldn't necessarily want to see them anywhere else.
Ali Price played the wing against England. That game that we don't mention.
That shall not be named. But I think there is a lot of, you know, there's a lot of versatility out there, and people, Lang can play 10 as well, which is obviously another option. So if all sorts of madness happens and we end up with Lang kind of having to fill in there, then that's an option. And at that point, we're probably putting Cornel Dupree in the centre, so that could be interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you think about who really kind of missing Gray and Hogg and Skinner, I suppose. So, you know, you look at that team and you think, well, Gray comes straight in for Toulis, Hogg comes in for Kinghorn, Skinner potentially comes in for Cornel Dupree, or Rob Harley or Nick Hanen and any of those ones. Probably Rob Harley, actually, because Rob Harley's the would provide lock and back row cover.
He's the 4-6.
So actually, within that, I mean, maybe Matt, you know, but again, you know, Matt Ferguson's in there, but I don't know who else. Really, it's kind of someone from the bench is going to come in and replace him. There's no, but I suppose Sam Johnson hasn't had much game time. He's maybe the only name that's missing there that isn't involved in a Premiership final that might kind of walk straight into the side where he match fit
against Wales, yeah,
or Sean Mayland.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I found quite interesting was it's almost like a trial, a national trial for the number eight shirt, because we still don't really have a clue who's playing number eight, and he's basically put all three of his options on the team. So he's probably going to just say, right, whoever plays the best can have the shirt against Wales. Maybe, I don't know.
It might be. Well, Cockers has decided that Haining's a second row now. So
is he?
Yeah, he tried that. Yeah,
it's that ballet training.
Well, exactly. I mean, it would make for a good lifter, that's for sure. But yeah, no, I'm not convinced that Nick Haining and all his massiveness is going to be an effective second row.
It depends, I suppose, what kind of number eight he's looking for. I think that's really anything we've ever really got to the bottom of that with Scotland. It's not, I think we've imposed our own idea. I think not just we as in on the podcast, but Scotland fans in general have opposed their own idea of a Billy Vinopola style, you know, crash ball eight who's going to make yards with ball in hand. And we've never had that. But I'm not actually sure that that's necessarily what Townsend has always done with his eight anyway, John.
No, he hasn't. I mean, he had at Glasgow, he had Strauss, and Strauss done a lot of that heavy carrying and could be really devastating. Unfortunately, that didn't really translate to the national scene or the international scene. But I think, you know, I think he's got three very different eights there, and that Haining's probably your closest to your kind of Bosch merchant, as it would be known. Cornel Dupree's got a bit more kind of, he's probably more of a ball player, and Ferguson's probably in the middle. What I've noticed about Ferguson in the couple of games this season is, again, I know he gets sent off last year for kind of, let's say that aggressive arm into the contact, but he seems to have dialed that up a notch further this year. So it's either going to go, he's going to be absolutely smashing people out the road, or he's going to get sent off, and I don't think there's anything in between.
Yeah, I suppose the other thing, Rory, is that really your ball carrier in the back row is Hamish Watson, who just pings off people
pretty much. Yeah, bounces around. I did forget about Blade Thompson, who's also in the squad,
injured. Yeah.
But,
is he injured?
He'd come off against Edinburgh. No, against Glasgow, sorry. He came off against Glasgow.
That would explain why he's not in the team too.
Yeah, there was talk of rib injury, I believe it was.
Because he could have put him in instead of Rob Harley, and then had all of his number eights.
But I think we've talked about the fact that Rob Harley's having, you know, we're in the middle of a Rob Harley renaissance, aren't we?
Rob Naissance.
He's got his lockdown dad bod.
He's rocking it hard.
I know, but he suits it. Yep. He wears it well. And he's, like you said, John, you know, he kind of is, I think we'd all written him off as, well, that's him back at Glasgow and, you know, he'll do a job and he'll fill in. But he, you know, someone's lit the fire underneath him, and he seems to be playing some of his best rugby in years.
Yeah, he is. And I think, it's good in a sense that, you know, you've got these bigger squads just now for the international window, and guys like Harley are getting maybe rewarded for some of their good form. There's probably still a question. There's probably still a question to say, you know, is he really at the level of being able to play a Six Nations match, or is he at the level of being able to play a test against one of the top five teams in the world? Probably not. But you know what you're going to get with Rob Harley, and almost in the same vein as maybe a Tim Swinson, you know, it's not going to be a first pick internationally, but you're not going to hesitate to throw him in if you have to. And I think that's not a bad thing, but at Pro 14 Pro 12, Pro question mark level, he's been utterly brilliant.
Yeah. There's a few comments in on Twitter, Rory, that I think you put a thing out today asking for people's impressions of the squad. Richard Gray got in touch and said, should Mish and Sutherland been wrapped in cotton wool this week and throwing someone like Cowan in to see where he's at, and maybe Jamie Batty too, to get him some game time?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fairly sensible argument there, because we know those guys are going to be key against Wales. They were having very good Six Nations way back in the first part of the Six Nations, and we kind of want that to continue, because that was kind of setting the platform, that and the kind of improved defence was setting the platform that Scotland were, you know, were doing okay. So yeah, there's definitely an argument to suggest that the likes of Cowan, for example, could have been in there. I mean, the thing with Rob Harley is I think he's sort of filling the Skinner role of a kind of utility. Yeah. Either a second row that can play back row or a back row that can play second row, which Townsend seems to like. And there isn't really, you know, in Skinner's absence, Rob's probably the next best thing to that.
But I suppose Cowan can play that role as well. That's the thing, I suppose, because Cowan has played second row, I think, for Scotland in the world, or I think certainly filled in there.
Yeah, he has.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's an interesting point. The other one was, and I'm going to throw this at you, John, when was the last time there were so few Glasgow players in the Scotland back line? Just because Sandy's not here, and I feel it's my business to throw that at you.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Someone on Twitter mistakenly suggested that there was no even any former Glasgow players in the back line, forgetting, of course, that the 9 and 10 are Glasgow. Yeah, it's been a long time since we've not seen any Glasgow backs, and I think it's probably just as well. It's a second team that we're putting out. So,
Graham,
that was a subtle dig, John. I caught it.
I was wondering when Cammy's face was going to gloss
over. I was just glossing over it. Moving on to avoid the letters. Graham says that Punt and Van der Meer were to bag a hat trick.
I wonder what the odds are on that. My bets have been terrible so far. So
yeah, I mean, if you think like Visser, Maitland, they've, you know, kind of wingers that have arrived with a little bit of fanfare from foreign pastures, and have actually had pretty good first tests. Yeah. I mean, Maitland, I think he scored in his first couple, and then went into the try scoring wilderness for a wee while. But, and I mean, Visser kind of took to it. So yeah, Doohan, it's a good chance to bring him in and stop South Africa capping him, so that we can start hyping the Doohan versus Cheslin Colby matchup at some point in the future.
See, yeah. If this was the early noughties, it would be a celebrity death match. Sort of thing we could do for that, wouldn't
there? Someone saying they would like, just Jay on Twitter, says he would like to say seen Scott Steele get a run. I think the problem with some of these players that are kind of on the fringes is if we were in normal times and this was a normal kind of test and we'd had, you know, a full season of
normal autumn
behind us, then I think there'd be an argument for that. But we've not, you know, some, the Glasgow players have had, you know, a handful of games. Edinburgh players have had a few more because they've maybe had more meaningful games. And there's a dig back at you, John, under their belt, but. You know, there is that element of, I think you kind of has to just roll the dice and play as close to the strongest team as possible, Rory, because after this, it's, you know, the next game against Wales is a meaningful game, because potentially, whisper it under your breath, and as fast as it might be, we could still potentially win the Six Nations.
Yeah, I mean, mathematically, it is still possible. And I think in terms of targeting the Wales game, you know, they should be looking at, yes, it's an away game to Wales, which we don't traditionally do well in, but, you know, it's not the millennium. There's no fans. It's about as close to a neutral fixture as you're going to get, unless they're going to be playing loads of fake noise or something. So, you know, that's a great chance to go down to Wales and get a good result. And you do, but you need the team to be firing from that, because they can't do that thing of going down to an away game and spending the first 20 minutes asleep. And especially if you've got Finn coming back into the team, you've got to presume he's going to be starting that game. You know, it's going to take... It's not a case of him getting up to speed with the rest of the team. It's a case of getting the rest of the team up to speed with the sort of nonsense that he's going to pull.
I mean, I think that they said that Townsend is that. I suppose the Finn thing's interesting because Townsend has said that it was, you know, he was only able to arrive in the team hotel, I think, on the Monday. I think he was actually there the Sunday night, Ali Price said, and, you know, we're all very thankful that he behaved himself and he's still in the team, and he obviously is, you know, staying. Either the drink policy has been altered or he's being a good boy. But he's still there.
More alcohol.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe they've just changed the labels and all the drinks. Giving him Beck's Blues and saying, yeah, that's proper beer, Finn. But there is that, I suppose, that thing, John, if he's not had the time to get up to speed, and as Rory says, other people haven't had time to get up to his speed either.
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, it's obvious, obviously, it's always a challenge when you come into international camps when you're a player who is not under the SRU kind of jurisdiction. You know, you're coming into a different game plan, different calls, all the sort of things. But a player at the level of Finn Russell, you know, it doesn't take you long to really pick up where you left off, even after a longer absence. But I think you'll probably see against Georgia that there'll be an early-ish change where Finn will come on and probably go to 10, and you may see even maybe to kind of nurse player Kinghorn coming back from injury, you may see a Hastings shifting out to fullback and that then being used to kind of just get Finn back in the saddle a wee bit. And but yeah, I mean, we would all like, obviously, Horn and Russell to come on, Lang and Price to head on off, and then Cats at a Rave to arrive. And
that's the dream, John. That's the dream.
I know. Friday night, Cats at a Rave.
The big question mark, I suppose, that's been raised about Finn Russell in the last week has been his, you know, the inconsistencies with his game, Rory, and particularly that European final against Exeter, where, you know, for the outset, those who, you know, maybe only see Finn Russell play the highlights of Finn Russell, i.e. people who aren't Scottish or watch Racing regularly, were a bit taken aback that he does blow hot and cold in matches, in because things don't always come off. But we know that, you know, for everything that doesn't come off, something spectacular will. And is it that you just have to take the rough with the smooth with Finn Russell? Otherwise, he's not Finn Russell, is he?
Yeah, I think, I mean, there were lots of, there were actually quite pleasing to see quite a lot of articles and things in the days after that European final saying, you know, that this is what Finn does. He's not as bad as you think he is because he makes a couple of kind of glaring howlers, and actually, you know, 70-75% of what he does is very good or better. I mean, you certainly saw that with the tries that he created for Zeebo. I mean, personally, I think it's part of his new master plan, because he's thrown that long miss pass so many times. He's going to have a new special move where he fakes that miss pass, and he's going to start using Lang and Harris inside, you know, cutting or the sort of Sam Johnson line, like he did in that Calcutta Cup against England, where he was looking for the no look pass, but he threw the little sort of shovel pass on, and Johnson went bursting through. Which was probably equally as skillful.
Yep.
For me, the issue was something that was mentioned a lot after that game, was the dropped goal. Should he have that in his armory? I mean, we know it's not really in his nature, but should he have it in his armory for these? If someone says, right, Finn, you have to just empty your mind, we're going to go for a dropped goal here, presumably they would say it in French. And then he wouldn't understand it, so he would just throw it on the pass again.
maybe that was the issue all along.
The goal to drop, super play, and then he kicks it, and you know that would have been enough to win it potentially.
Yeah, but what he would have probably tried is, rather than drop goal, he would have dropped it and then dribbled it through someone's legs before throwing a no-look pass out the back to nobody, and. You know, maybe they'll go the length of the park and an intercept try, or they'll end up, it'll bobble up and they'll score under the post. It's, you know, you just never know what he's going to try. I think the drop goal thing.
I said the Alan McDonald with the fantastic triple bluff. I like that.
Yeah. A fake backwards knock on. that so he's pretended to fumble the pass, but he makes sure he does it backwards so he can then kick it.
Well, he can juggle, of course.
He can, yeah. So that video earlier on, that was good.
The I suppose it's that we don't know. And I think this was what frustrated me with the drop goal chat. Is we don't know who was calling that, and he's obviously part of the leadership group at Racing, and we know he's heavily involved in discussions around their attack. So he would have had a say in it and potentially could have called it, but. You don't know if the forwards are saying, no, we want to keep trucking up. We think we're wearing them down, or we think the space out wide, and we can finish the game. So it's on the one hand, yes, he could have dropped back for the drop goal, but if we don't know whether he was, for all we know, he was screaming, "I can drop back and get a drop goal," and he's got the scrum half or the forward saying, "No, we're going to keep sticking up the jumper and going for the try line."
There was five minutes on the clock as well. So yeah.
It wasn't
the last gasp, but I mean his scrum halves didn't really cover him in glory in that game anyway.
They should have
hooked a rebaron after about 10 minutes and got Mashno on.
It was pretty dreadful, wasn't it? Yeah.
It's a good game though, great game to watch.
Great game of rugby. One of the best I've seen as a neutral in a long, long time. It's cracking.
It's dull, isn't it, if people don't make mistakes?
Oh, yeah.
You don't want that. That's just like watching Leinster. Nobody likes Leinster.
Yeah, that's true. Nobody does like Leinster.
Exactly. That's why, because they're too good. I'll ask for your prediction. I mean, I don't think anyone's predicting a loss here. I say kind of waiting for next week when I've got to replay that clip of me saying nobody's predicting a loss here. But... Rory, what should Scotland be targeting out of this game, I guess? That's the big question, is what are they looking to get out of it other than everybody coming through unscathed?
Well, it's not really a competition, but equivalent of a bonus point, 4 tries would be nice, and obviously the win. It's get Doohan on the board. Yep. Other than that, to be honest, the main priority for me would be get that front row through the game intact, because actually that's probably the area the Georgians are likely to do the most damage, is the front row. So it does. I can see the logic behind it, but it's also because those guys have just started to tick. Sutherland's form looks like it's kind of picked off from where he was in the Six Nations. Fraser Brown at the moment looks far better of the two hookers choices we've got, and there's Zambags has had a great couple of games for Glasgow. So I think, that's the first choice front row, and that we want to face Wales. So getting them through the game intact would probably be, you'll want to get Kebble on and get him capped. So
yeah,
you hope that kind of drives it a bit.
Ollie Kebble, as we noted today, who looks like Ulysses Claw in the Black Panther, or Andy Serkis playing Ulysses Claw. Yeah, a larger version, obviously, but...
Not that much larger.
No.
Serkis really goes for it in that movie.
I don't know whether or not the fake arm would be any good for the bind.
I mean, he might get away with
a vibranium arm.
I mean, he does get pinged a lot for his bind, so maybe he does need a vibranium arm. Maybe that's what's happening in camp, and it's part of a multi-stage transformation. And the blonde hair was just the first part of it. And it's actually to hide the vibranium injections he's getting.
Who knows? John, what do you think Scotland need to get out of the game then?
Yeah, I think I'm kind of thinking about this game as sort of like a Formula One test, almost. The very first sort of shakedown, I think they call it, when the cars go out and they do the run and they just test all the systems and they check everything's working as they anticipated. I think that's all we're kind of looking for, just making sure we're getting the cobwebs off, getting guys like Doohan kind of running the lines that we want to see, getting everybody kind of functioning as best as we can, because obviously we've had limited minutes for these guys coming into camp, and we don't want to peak now. We don't need to peak now. It's about kind of the competitive games that are coming. And, we obviously have to think about the autumn series and consider that competitive as well, because obviously there's a
Jeff Bezos cup is up for grabs.
Exactly. Yeah.
And
we
don't want to end up playing the last game at Murrayfield, because I'm having a terrible time of it
against Georgia again.
Do you think all the players, if you win the Jeff Bezos Cup, do you get an Amazon Prime membership for free?
Well, like an Amazon Black Card.
Yeah. And then you can watch the tests back on Prime.
I think you get, if you lose, you have to go and work in a distribution center over Christmas.
Straight down to Gourock, off you go. Oh, dear.
A couple of, Alan McDonald says, you can't get excited about who plays hooker after realizing it's a matter of who plays 20 minutes longer, which is very true. It's one or the other. They're fairly interchangeable. Ewan Ashman's been called up from Sale Sharks, apparently, as cover.
Has he? Oh, good.
Yes, this week. So that's interesting. That's it for Scotland, Georgia. So we'll come back to that next week and we'll do a wee match review. We'll have player ratings and a match report up on the blog as well at some point once we work out who's doing what and draw straws for it. We'll probably fight that. Depending on how terrible it is, we'll be fighting to do not to do the match ratings. The other game at the weekend, Scotland women resume their Six Nations campaign against France. It's a really strange bunch of fixtures, the women's one, because whereas with the men's Six Nations, they've gone straight into it in order. They've shifted the women's ones about a little bit. So technically, Scotland should be playing Italy first, but they're not playing them till December, and the France game's been brought forward. But some of the other games have been played in order. So it's looking at the Six Nations fixture list is an absolute nightmare. So they're playing. So Scotland women are playing. I'll get the right page to make sure I'm not. I've definitely got this right. Here we are. So they're playing France at 4:20. That's live on BBC Alba. So wonderful to see rugby back on BBC Alba. Yep. I don't know whether they'll be doing. I don't know if they'll be doing crowd noise. That'll be interesting because obviously the pitch side mics will be there, as will the ref mic. And I assume one of the reasons they have crowd noise on the Pro 14 coverage, as much as everyone complains about it, is to cover some of the stuff that goes on the pitch. You would think. So that'll be interesting.
And that will still be true of the women's game.
Yes, absolutely. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to sitting down and watching that with the kids on Sunday afternoon at 4:20. Not only with the Gaelic commentary and having to explain that to them, but also maybe if I just tell them any words they hear, it works actually well. Any words you don't hear, just tell us Gaelic.
Yeah, that's just sorted.
Yeah, we'll be fine. So it's a really hard game for Scotland women because a lot of the squad are based in Scotland. For Scottish teams who haven't played since lockdown, they've been in training. Premier 15s players have had a couple of games under the belt, so you've got your we've got a plethora of players at Loughborough Lightning and a couple elsewhere. So we've got Abby Evans is at Darlington. There is Rachel Malcolm and who else is at Loughborough Lightning? Leah Bartlett is at Loughborough Lightning as well, and Helen Nelson is another one. I'm looking here. There's quite a small squad that they've named, and it's Brian Easton's taken over coaching. France, on the other hand, their players have been playing since September. Not only that, but they're up there with England in terms of the top two sides. England and France really are the top two sides in Six Nations. It's going to be a difficult game, John, this for Scotland.
Yeah, I mean, just from the very fact that some of the team have not really had a competitive fixture of any sort, it was always going to be a difficult ask, and we do struggle against France usually anyway in the women's game, so you know you would kind of expect them to struggle anyway. I just hope, I kind of hope like a proper French team turns up and we don't know what they're going to do and they just do mad stuff. And
A French team.
Yeah. Like a proper French team. And then it kind of gives Scotland a chance to get into the game. Cause I would really, really after, I mean, there's been a lot of positivity about maybe some of the progress the Scotland women have been making over the last few years. They've had a few quite decent results, and you would hate for that to kind of be eradicated for whatever reason. You know, obviously you can make excuses for not having played games and stuff, but if you were to take a thumping, it's never a good look.
No, I think that, I mean, they lost 53-0 to England in February, you know, which, and England, you know, England and France are there, streets ahead of everybody else, just in terms of, they've pretty much both got full professional games going in the country. I think that the thing is probably what Scotland are needing to target is to look for the small wins and the small games within the game and not worry about the overall score.
Yeah.
To try and kind of win a couple of battles and really kind of come out having maybe given France a scare early on, or, you know, kept them within. I'm not wanting to do them down at all because I think the women's team have done, but if they keep within 20 points of them, I think would be good given that France beat Wales 50-0.
True.
There's an opportunity, I think, for Scotland overall, because they did come close to Ireland. They, at the minute, they've only played two games. They're fifth out of six. Wales are bottom. I think there's an opportunity for Scotland women to kind of, you know, overtake Italy and end up kind of mid-table. I think that would be real progress for them, Rory.
Yeah, I mean, they've really got nothing to lose in terms of this tournament. Philip Doyle was obviously, he looked like he was kind of having a positive effect, but obviously I think his contract was up in December. It may well have been renewed, but he's kind of stepped down due to, I think, he was shielding from COVID. So obviously they've had an interim. So it was actually, you know, before that news was announced, it was looking quite hopeful because it seemed like they would have a good bunch of time together in the autumn, probably more time than you'd get during the course of a normal Six Nations almost, because it's like, this solid block of games. Physically, you know, tough on the bodies for the men and the women's players, but in terms of kind of intensity of training, and that's probably the sort of thing that the Scotland women's side need in order to kind of develop. And so it's a wee bit of a shame that Doyle had to step down, and it'll be interesting to see how the recruitment process goes. I'm not sure what the market for coaches is like at the moment, with restrictions on people travelling. Nobody's really going to want to move. So maybe Brian Easton is the man to kind of keep them going forward. But I guess we'll see what sort of impact he can have.
Yeah, I think it was, you know, Philip Doyle had come with a really good kind of back, I think, in terms of what he'd done with Ireland women. Mm-hmm. And I think he had, you know, that Scotland beat South Africa, I think, in the last summer.
Yep.
You know, the women's team beat South Africa last summer. So there's a lot of pro. It kind of reminds me of where the men's team were maybe about 5-10 years ago, that they were beating the likes of Ireland occasionally, and you know, they'd win the odd game, and you really kind of, to not end up bottom of the Six Nations was a good Six Nations for us. But there were kind of positives you could take from games. And you look at where the men's game is now in Scotland internationally, and you know, they're kind of taking a long view at it. There's progress there, and you may, hopefully in 10 years we're talking about something, the women's game being in a different place. I mean, certainly the talk of there being I think Premier RFU are obviously struggling, and I think there has definitely been talk of an opportunity there for a Scottish professional women's team to be playing a kind of Anglo-Welsh tournament, John.
Yeah, we mentioned that previously, hadn't we? And it was one of the things we kind of discussed at length as to, you know, the opportunity that would present, and whether, I think it was mentioned in the context of the potentially a third pro team for the men's game, and, you know, whether it would be taking funding away or all that sort of stuff. So yeah, it's interesting. I think it's only going to develop more, which will be great to see, and hopefully Scotland can continue to make some progress. As you say, I always find it a bit disheartening though when you talk about taking wee wins, you know, in games, and maybe that's just probably got beaten too many times for club side, but it was always the chat, you know, oh, let's win the second half, boys. Like, oh God, really? That's where we're at. Oh no.
I went to that Calcutta Cup. Just about.
It did, yeah. That's true.
It did, yeah. There was a tweet. I'm trying to find it now. There was a tweet from Rona Lloyd, and I can't find it now. It was a couple of months ago, and so I might be struggling to find it. He was kind of talking about the, I think it was a Will Greenwood podcast where he talked about the money that they get from, you know, the England players, I think, get for an international appearance. And she was saying, you know, half of that would allow her to be a full-time professional and not have to kind of work on the side or generate extra income. And I suppose that's, is there an opportunity in rugby at the minute, or within Scotland and elsewhere, to kind of take a look at that and say, could there be a realignment of finances so that women professional players are paid fairly, or certainly paid enough so that they don't have to take on extra jobs or supplement their income? And, you know, men's, I'm not saying rugby, you know, there are, you know, obviously the kind of, there's the top paid players who are paid, you know, more than enough. And then, you know, obviously there are probably like professional men players who aren't paid, you know, aren't paid, you know, mega bucks, but maybe there needs to be a realignment given the opportunity we've got under COVID, Rory.
Yeah, I mean, so she was saying basically a couple of games for England would be enough to kind of cover her cost for a year.
Well, no, so, I think half of an England match fee for a man, yeah. A male match fee would be enough to, that would be enough for her to pay professionally for a year without having to do anything, without having to supplement her income or anything. So yeah, the figure in this video is right. Getting half of what men get in one game would allow me to train full time for a whole year. It would literally be a dream come true. Women's sport isn't even asking for equality. We're asking for a fraction of that.
Yeah. If you can find someone with the you know to fund it, I think it would definitely be it would be great to give them that opportunity to put them on a level playing field with the players in the likes of England and France, where the women's players are getting a bit more of a leg up and are a lot tougher proposition on the field as a result.
Even just thinking about it logically, right? See this idea of the match fee, right? So you get paid to represent your country. The benefits of you being an international and representing your country, you always get more bargaining when you start to negotiate contracts with clubs. You get paid by your club. You get a good salary from your club. Why do you need a match fee from your country as well? You're getting all the exposure, all the opportunity to go and make yourself a world-renowned international athlete, and they have to pay you 25 grand to do it as well. It doesn't make sense.
I suppose that's the answer, isn't it? If you get rid of match fees for the male players, and you give that as a
that's your full-time, yeah, that's your full-time salary for your professional women. There you go.
That's a start. Completed it.
That's it. So. And there's no reason why the male players couldn't do that if they're feeling generous.
Fair.
Donate their match fees.
Can you imagine if you said that to James Haskell? Think what he would do. He would explode. It would be hilarious.
I'd also point out what we were talking about earlier. If any of the Scotland players want to donate their match fees to us, we could do what we want to do for a year as well.
Yeah, I know. Absolutely. As I said, the maximum Patreon is not that's only a suggested maximum £5. We will read your name out as well if you want us to.
Johnny Cash. That's his nickname.
I'll tell you what. If a Scotland player wants to donate their match fee to this podcast, I'll write them their own jingle.
Now we
find out who the real fans are.
Does that extend to fans as well, though? Like, if they want to, you know.
Oh, I mean, if someone wants to pay us a ridiculous amount of money, I'll write them a jingle. I'm not saying it'd be a good jingle. It'd be a jingle.
I was actually going to say that if anyone out there wants to sponsor the coverage of on the blog of the international games, they're more than welcome to drop us an email.
Yes, by all means. I think it's editor@scottishrugbyblog.co.uk. I think it was Rory. No, Rory at
scottishrugbyblog.co.uk. Yeah, Rory app. That'll get through.
Rory app, and that'll get through to us. So, yes, always up for that. The next thing we've got on my notes, I mean, this is the Pro 14. I mean, it's Ospreys, Glasgow, Edinburgh, Connacht. I suppose, like you were saying, Rory, the big question is probably, one, we don't know who's getting released back, if anybody at all. I suppose the other one is Edinburgh, is who they're going to end up with at fullback.
Yeah, Somebody suggested Tom Brown, but I thought he'd retired. But
I think he's playing in America. Dougie Fife's playing in America, isn't he?
Dougie Fife's in America. I think Tom Brown's retired, yeah.
Well, there
watch
we go.
This space, guys. Keep your phones nearby.
Yeah, somebody suggested Chamberlain could play there.
Oh, that would be, you know what? That wouldn't be the worst move, actually. It would be a great way to get more minutes on the park in a competitive environment when he's maybe not at fullback, got as many decision-making responsibilities. I think it's a good way to do it. I mean, it's not quite the same as like Dan Carter playing 12 for his first match and then like going to 10, but you know, the theory is the same.
Yeah. I don't know if this is Alan McDonald suggesting that you stick Pinball Mishard in, but I don't really know if he's suggesting that Hamish Watson kind of then plays on Sunday as well. I wouldn't put it past him. Rue Jackson did that one year, didn't he?
He did, yeah. He was called up last. It was when Hogg pulled up in the Australia game with an injury, and Byron McGuigan came in. Rory Jackson went on to the bench. He was the 24th man. And then he didn't even stay for the aftermatch stuff. He immediately got on his merry to head down to, it was Cardiff, Glasgow were playing in, and he was on his merry way down there and then played, I think he played 60 minutes for Glasgow.
Yeah. Someone suggesting that Tom Brown is in the seven setup.
I thought he was, aye.
Yeah. Who knows? Alan said he was suggesting the Pinball Mishard for a Jingles thing. I think we did. I don't know. Did I do a Pinball Mishard song at some point? I can't remember. Somewhere I don't catalogue these things.
To the tune of Pinball Wizard, possibly.
Wizard, yeah. That might be a Patreon only one for rights reasons.
So I can confirm that on the Edinburgh Rugby website, Tom Brown is a 404 page.
So he's an error, technically.
Tom Brown is a system glitch right now.
Tom, if you're listening, tell us what the hell you're up to.
Tell you what, why are you a 404, mate? Come on.
I'm pleased it's not a 420. I'm pleased it's not a 420 error.
Yeah. 500 are the worst. That means something's gone really badly wrong.
On that note, then, we're going to move on and we're going to do this. Yes, it's Hands in the Ruck. It's our Any Other Business section of the podcast where we ask you to get in touch with things that have annoyed you, things that have pleased you from Scottish rugby and further afield. We've had quite a few in this week when I can find them. Our super secret Patreon page, where if you sign up to the Patreon, you can become a member of. Alan McDonald got in touch, although he's watching this live, so I mean he could comment if he wanted to. He says his hands in the ruck is Nigel Owens channeling Sher by trying to turn back time at the end of the thrilling final, European final, leading to a sense of anticlimax. There was a lot of people unhappy with how he spoke to the TMO.
I was just going to mention that. I particularly like the, I'm not interested in technically yes or no, please.
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing was, I thought that he kind of explained what he wanted quite clearly in terms of the time and the other time. And then I thought the TMO, I got really confused because I couldn't work out if actually the TMO was telling him that they'd done the right thing or the wrong thing. So I don't know whether it was actually justice was served or not. I have no idea.
I think it was all done to cover up the fact that maybe Nigel just didn't ask for the time to go back on. And
well, one thing I would point out is that in Nigel Owens, it was his episode of The Chase was on that night, so there was every chance that he knew it was on repeat on ITV2 and he was rushing home to watch himself.
Yeah, no, it was a bit mad, really, wasn't it? And I mentioned it to a few folks and the reply was, oh, they're all out of practice. Oh.
Cameron Scott got in touch. His hands in the ruck is the awful saltiness coming from the Welsh over Scott saying Finn Russell deserves a call up to the Lions. They truly believe Dan Biggott is miles better than he is. I think that's a tale as old as time on this podcast.
I too have had this argument. Yeah.
Yeah. With a Welshman or just
just in general.
With a Welsh person.
Yeah.
I think it was because I called him Dan the winemaker, and that's what wound him up.
Triggered.
Yeah. It's a strange one, isn't it? Because, I mean, Wales have got such a legacy of fantastic running fly halves, and yet they seem to think that Dan Biggar, who is an average fly half who can kick the ball really high and is able to get in the road of people and get fouled when he jumps, they think that's some sort of, like, you know, the reincarnation of Edwards or something. It's ridiculous. I'm trying not to be controversial, but they're silly.
That's the Lions starting 10 you're talking about there.
Well, exactly.
He's not even first pick 10 for Wales anymore.
Is he first pick 10 at Northampton?
I think so, yes.
Probably.
Yeah, they're spending a lot of money on him. They couldn't really just justify having him.
Yeah.
You know, and they've got to do something to get, you know, basically they've realised that to get Nairo, easy for me to say, to get the big man, big tack, any sort of chance at scoring tries, they've got to kick the ball into the corners and have him run in from 5 metres or he gets a bit tired. So,
yeah. The other hands in the ruck, the Shield got in touch today, hands in the ruck has to be about Sam Hill, the Algo Klein's hands in the ruck, which is a magnificent turnover.
From the side.
Yeah. It was from the side, to be fair. But I mean, it's hard to tell for a scrum half because they're just going to get shunted at the way and look like they're coming from the side anyway because they have to. They're too small.
I think Owen, Nigel Owens, has come out and had something to say regarding his inconsistent performance at the weekend as well. I think he'd thrown an answer to some of his critics.
Was he blasting critics as BBC, not BBC Wales, what's the Wales Online?
Wales.
Owens blasts critics.
I think it was a tweet. I think what you were saying is somebody replied to a tweet, and I think it was one of these innocent things where someone said, what a game Nigel Owens had, and it was a former pro, and someone replied and said, I thought he was very patronising, actually. And Nigel Owens came back and said, who do you think you are? And the guy said, oh, I'm sorry. I said, well, he's been patronising. You've come in and been patronising to the guy. And then he posted the guy and then apologised to you.
See, sarcasm can be hard on the internet. Maybe Nigel was just having he was being a bit meta, having a joke. Ooh. And the guy didn't get it.
Didn't, yeah, maybe.
He was being patronising. He was jokingly being patronising, but you can't tell.
I particularly liked how patronising he was. I don't know what Finn Russell said to him when I think Finn was going to kick a penalty into touch. And all we heard from Owens was, I think you'll manage, boy. And I don't know what Finn said to him, but obviously Nigel had utmost confidence in his abilities, so...
So he was like, can you believe after this I'm only allowed to have 2 beers?
Speaking of which, this is a nice segue. Alan Donald got in touch to his hands in the ruck was, it's a photo of three international colleagues sharing a beer after a game, get over it. This is the photograph that appeared everywhere on every rugby half and half Twitter account saying, oh, what a sport. There's no other sport like it. And it was Stuart Hogg and Finn Russell toasting each other with a can of beer after, and it's like they're friends. It's like, you know, they're not sociopaths who've played a game of rugby against each other. I'm going to ignore you. No, pretend I don't even know you until we're in the Scotland camp. Johnny Gray was cruelly cut out of that photograph as well.
Lesser spotted Gray getting because it doesn't fit the narrative, I guess.
No, but that like I said, it's just three guys who know each other having a chat after a game of rugby. I don't think there's any, I'm pretty sure that happens in every sport.
Well, yeah, Alan Dimmock found a few examples. He had one of some American football players having a chat from opposite teams after a game. I mean, it's pretty standard, especially in this country, you know, where most of the players will have come across each other at one point or another.
And they all played at the same time at Glasgow. Yeah. And won a title together and were part of a squad for like 6 years together.
Yeah. I think, you know, the one beer jokes were legitimate. Just one beer jokes were legitimate you know, but I think anything more than like this, you know, people actually salivating and getting aroused by the fact that two people were having a beer and a civilized conversation after a game of rugby was a bit, it went a bit too far.
I was quite disappointed that there weren't any hashtag rugby values photos of them cleaning the stand afterwards. All the tape and squashed up plastic bottles, they had to go, guys. You know, get the brushes out.
Heineken have missed a trick there, haven't exactly. they?
I don't think I talked about this in the podcast. I had an argument with somebody on Twitter because
there was two guys.
Here's me have it.
Were you correcting them about something?
I know. No, it was a photo after, I can't remember who it was, and I might be Sale Sharks, but they were sweeping up in a dressing room, and one was using a squeegee mop to sweep up the dry mud. And I was like, well, I honestly didn't believe, I think what it looked like they'd been told, post-match, said, look, the cleaners are nearly done. Can you guys come and hold a couple of brooms and we'll take photos for the social media? That's what it looked like. And then I got in an argument about the technicalities of how you use a squeegee mop, because I was trying to say, well, that guy's not using the squeegee, right? And they were saying, no, you could clear the mud first. I said, no, you sweep the mud up, then you hose it down, and then you use your squeegee to get rid of the muddy water. Yeah. You don't have somebody with a dry brush and a squeegee going at the mud at the same time, because that's just going to muddy up your squeegee. So when you go to squeegee the water later on, you end up with more muddy water.
Yep.
This is science.
Clearly a man who has humbly cleaned the sheds at some point.
Yeah, I know. You know, I'm not talking about. I used to, you know, I've swept many a wet room floor in my day. Honestly, hey, John, what's your hands in the ruck this week?
I've been kind of pondering. I'm going to go with it, Rory. I'm going to go with the interesting chat. I don't know. I don't think I'm even that annoyed about this. It's more just intrigued with the logic behind this. But there was a comment recently on the Scottish Rugby Forum regarding players and people not having hairy legs anymore in rugby. And there was like people were going into the actual science of this, saying like, well, some players, you know, it's maybe it's from the tape, from, you know, from the lifting, the second rows might have damaged the hair follicles, and therefore, you know, they actually used to have hairy legs but they don't anymore. And some people, you know, maybe it's all that kinesiology tape they have to put on. And so I was thinking, this is bonkers. Why are we And someone commented saying that that the person in question's TV must have been much more HD than theirs, because they'd never really noticed and never really got those close-ups to find out. So, but I guess it got me thinking. I mean, I've never really contemplated the hirsute nature of Scottish rugby players in any way, shape, or form. But you know, you got to contemplate all of life's mysteries.
Now, according to WilkinsonSword.com. And we're not sponsored by them, although yes. You know, other razor brands are available. The razor company. Every podcast, this is how I knew we were never going to make it as a podcast. Yeah, every podcast was sponsored by mail order razors, and we were not. But I think that's more just because they took one look at our Twitter profiles and realized we were not.
Not razor
we were not
guys.
Acquainted with razors. So WilkinsonSword.com says that rugby players shave their legs to make themselves harder to grapple in a tackle. I don't know how much adhesion or grip you'd get from. I mean, obviously they're not grasping onto. We're not talking about guys who are like, you know, long hairy legs where you're grabbing onto the hair. I think it's more just like an adhesion benefit.
Makes you more slippery.
Yeah.
Then by that argument, you want really really sweaty players as well.
So Prince Andrew would be a terrible
Prince
rugby player.
Andrew would be a shocking rugby player. There you go. You heard it here first, guys.
But Bruce Springsteen would be amazing.
Yeah. There we go. So I think we're coming up with a new Patreon special, you guys.
the sweat spectrum.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, the Andrew to Springsteen scale.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I, if your technique's right, you're not going to have to rely on your... Like I'm thinking, I had a conversation with my daughter recently, and we were talking about the whole, you know, like when you get your pruny fingers in the bath and how it's like meant to be some sort of, you know, evolutionary thing to give you more grip to rocks. It kind of prunes up so you don't slip off rocks as much. Not that you should be climbing rocks after you go for a bath, but, you know, I guess some people must have thought that was a good idea. And surely if you're like playing a game of rugby and you're trying to tackle someone, you're not relying on those like grippy pruny bits to try and tackle them. You would normally just smash them with your shoulder and bring them down.
Yeah,
whilst wrapping the arms.
Of course, yes. I should add that that's what you're meant to do.
I don't think anybody's grabbing somebody by the thigh with one hand. It's not good. I think it's a tap tackle, but no.
He was grabbing people by the thigh.
I think it's just a young people thing that young people seem to prefer shaving their bodies.
These kids today, Cam. These kids today.
That's what the fashion is, isn't it? With their abs and their Spotify's and their
TikToks. Yeah.
I think Rob Harley could show them a thing or two. You know, dad bods and
I know.
I bet he's not shaved his legs.
If anyone knows if Rob Harley does shave his legs, get in touch.
Rory, while you do your hands in the rocks, I'm going to Google photos of Rob Harley.
Okay, his legs in particular.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have much of a hands in the rock other than I've decided to start policing people posting team lists on the rugby blog comments in a vertical format, because it's occurred to me that if you're looking at it on a mobile and somebody's posted a full 23 line comment including spaces, that's probably more scrolling than you want. If there's four or five of them, somebody posted two teams, I think the first team and a second team, so we're telling everyone to post their teams in a single line paragraph sort of thing, like we do in the on the site itself, to keep things neat. But I do have a hands in the ruck from Jane Robertson on Twitter, who said that lilac strip, especially with the blue and white striped opposition. So a bit of a kick clash in the Champions Cup final. And it seems strange that completely obvious things like that still get missed in this day and age. The fact that, especially as there's no crowd, everyone's watching it on TV, that you can't actually tell them apart from a distance. Especially as nobody told me it was on Channel 4. So I was watching the whole first half on an iPad screen. And then I thought, why is everyone going on about Channel 4? And I thought, I could have been watching this in the big telly.
I could have been watching
without
it.
Without Austin Healy as well.
I know. I could have been watching about trying to figure out how to get free BT Sport. And then I just gave up in the end and thought I was watching the highlights.
Favourite story from trying to watch the European Cup, and I hope she doesn't mind me mentioning it, was Rhiannon McCrory, who, bless her, listened to the second half on the radio, because she believed she couldn't watch the game. And then someone afterwards pointed out it was on Channel 4, and she was very, very, very upset about this.
Yeah, see, now I'm quite upset that you just told me it was just on Channel 4, because I didn't realise that until now.
All right.
I was following it on Twitter, because my BT Sport. I thought I had free BT Sport through my EE contract, but I didn't.
Yeah, I mean, I've got it through the broadband, but...
Well, I thought I had it through the broadband too, because I've got BT, but apparently I don't.
No.
I'm not on the right contract. So then I thought, I'll just give it up and I'll work out how to watch it later on. And then I decided that then, you know, other things got in the way and I didn't have time to watch it back. But if I'd known it was on Channel 4, I would have watched it. So
it might be on the 4-player, but
it's probably on catch-up, anyway, my hands in the ruck is... it was a tweet by Rob Kitson off The Guardian, who was complaining that rugby had lost its soul because Leicester Tigers have sold the naming rights to the stadium. So it's now the Mattioli Woods Welford Road instead of just Welford Road. And he was bemoaning the kind of lack of, you know, the loss of rugby soul, and said, I'm never going to call it anything other than Welford Road. And it kind of struck me. I know we kind of had this kind of hand-wringing in Scotland when it was BT Murrayfield instead of just Murrayfield, but I think in the current climate, people moaning about clubs doing anything they can just to stay afloat and get money in is pretty rich, and it's pretty mean-hearted, because, you know, it helps, you know, any mention you can do to something like BT Murrayfield or the Mattioli Woods Welford Road Stadium then justifies the sponsorship deal that means that then the company sponsoring you is going to pay you to sponsor again and possibly sponsor more if they feel like it's having an impact. And especially at the minute when, you know, money's so scarce, rugby's pretty much a sport that's on its knees. It seemed a very anti-rugby thing to want to do. See, I'm preserving its soul. I'm not going to mention, say it's sold its name. It seemed kind of spite, but, you know, cut off your nose to spite your face. So that bothered me this week.
Especially given that someone pointed out later on in the thread that he had previous of using the club, stadium that had been sponsored or named, and he had previous on this, and he denied that he ever had. But of course, the person dug out the examples very quickly for him, which you got to love Twitter for that. But yeah,
I like this from Alan McDonough. He said Rob Kitson's employers at the Guardian are always begging cash off the website readers, so it's a bit rich for him commenting on that.
Does that mean that because of the internet exists, that journalism has lost its soul then? As it's obviously in the internet's fault that journalists and newspaper websites are having to beg for cash.
Yeah.
There you go. That's us going proper, mate, isn't it?
Well, there we go.
I think with Rob as well, it's quite interesting just to think that you know, if he just refuses to use the name, then he'll also find himself lacking in a press pass very quickly.
You would have thought so.
Yes.
Yeah. You would. Yeah. The other thing we've got before we go is anybody who's seen this on Twitter, I think it went up yesterday, is Tommy Seymour has read The Snail and the Whale on Twitter, and it's one of the nicest, most loveliest thing you will ever see. And he reads it beautifully, and it's a story I've read to my kid many a time, and he reads it very nice. It's for Glasgow Loves Reading 20 to support the campaign for reading, and he reads it really, really well. So we asked people earlier today, if you could have any Scottish rugby player, past or present, to read you a bedtime story, who would it be and why? And I said Jeff Cross, beards optional, The Night Before Christmas. Obviously, if he wants to dress up as Santa Claus, not a foursome. I'll foot the cost of him dressing as Santa Claus as well. That'd be my choice. Did you have any choices before I go into the listeners' choices, John?
So I was thinking about people I would like to read a bedtime story to, and I was actually thinking of one of my favourites for reading to my daughter was Where the Wild Things Are. I was just thinking, who's going to be the most receptive in the current squad to that? And it's obviously George Horn. I think he would just sit there. I think he would sit there cross-legged and just be like totally captivated by it. So if George is up for that, I'm happy to read that to him.
Yeah, I think I could probably arrange. Rory, did you have any thoughts on this?
Not really. Seeing as it's almost Halloween, I'm thinking you could go the opposite way and get like Al Kellick to read you Dracula or something.
Well, that was Johnny McGinty's. His suggestion was Al Kellock reading the famous kids' bed story, Go the F to Sleep.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That would work,
That would work, yeah.
That was one of Genevieve's favourites as well, actually, funnily enough. But we had to come up with a creative way to, obviously. So we changed the F bit to Bloop. And it's quite a funny story if you change F to Bloop. And then, obviously, there's other swear words in there as well that you have to get creative about. When you're pretty sleep deprived, it's a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, well, we've been going through the Roald Dahl books and reading some of the culturally inappropriate things.
That's
taking some creative rewriting on the hoof as well. We've got Dougie Lowe came up with, he says, story time has to be Jim Telfer reading The Three Little Pigs with plenty of references to rucking and keeping their porcine heads low. what else do we have? D4 said Jim Telfer reading The Night Before Christmas. But Warrior Grant says Sean Lamont reading The Gruffalo in Scots. Sean Lamont probably believes The Gruffalo is real.
I was thinking Finn Russell reading anything by like Fantastic Mr. Fox would be Finn Russell's kind of
Finn Russell reading Dr. Zeus.
Perfect.
Green eggs and ham.
There you go.
I like though, this is Martin Bell. This is the one we're going to end on today. Martin Bell says, given today's Lions bombshell, I'm assuming that the legally mandated Lions chat could also cover the bedtime story request, in which case I'll have Warren Gatland reading The Lion Who Came to Tea.
Nice.
So for our Patreons, I will read a version of The Lion Who Came to Tea.
Nice.
Involving a lion who comes to tea and maybe has one too many beers and is asked to leave. So that is what you'll get on your Patreon podcast. So you'll have to pay £3. If you pay £3, you can cancel it straight away. Pay £3. You don't get your money back, but you could pay £3 just to listen to that and then not subscribe again next month.
Does he come down to breakfast in a Japan top the next morning?
We shall see. All will be revealed. But unfortunately, I left the tiger who came to tea up in my son's bedroom tonight, and he was still awake when I came down to start doing this. So I have to sneak up there now and go and nab it and try and change it. And I'll stick it to the end of the Patreon podcast for our patrons. But so hopefully that'll help you get to sleep if you listen to this before bedtime. For the moment, though, we'll see you next week, either Tuesday, Wednesday. We'll keep an eye on Facebook and Twitter, and we'll tell you when it is, probably most likely Tuesday. But for the moment, it is goodbye from me and goodbye from Rory and John.
Goodbye.
Hey, oh.